Do I have to spend my own money? Yes. Let me tell you why and show you why it's important to spend your own money so that you can understand why I have to say no sometimes.
Hey, my mom wrote this, and they can bring it to school and share it, and then you become sort of a celebrity, with a young fan base saying, "Yes, oh my gosh, that's so and so's mom. She wrote these really great books."
Are you ready to embark on an adventure through the world of words? Join us on the Reading Revolution, and let's explore the exciting world of literacy together.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Reading Revolution. I'm your host, Josh Gregory, and we've got a great guest for you today. We're joined by Alicia Kelly, who is an author and entrepreneur. You can check out her website, 3CoolKings, that's cool with a K, .com. And Alicia, thank you so much for being on The Reading Revolution. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So let's get right into things. Let's talk a little bit about the website, and I'd like to know how you got into being a children's author.
Okay, so you mentioned the name of my website is 3CoolKings. So the 3CoolKings are actually my three sons. I'm a boy mom, and I have three sons. I like to say that this is their business. I'm just inviting the flame. So how we started the business was as a mom. I was just trying to find children's literature that would get my kids excited about reading. My middle child specifically, his literacy rates were decreasing, were declining, and his teacher was letting me know that he's just not excited about reading. So I wanted to be able to try to find books that kind of reflected who he was, but in my research, I couldn't find a lot of literature that had main characters that looked like him. So that's what got me on the path to writing the stories. Basically stories of my sons. A lot of the characters are my children. So that's how I started writing children's books.
So what was your background before you got to that point where you said, hey, I can actually play a pretty serious role in my children's education?
I have my degree in television technology. And what excited me about getting that degree was the professional class. I enjoy playing with graphics. I enjoyed creating images. And so what discouraged me about being an author at first was having to hire an illustrator. But when I learned that I can create the graphics myself and manipulate the images, taking pictures of my sons and coloring over them in Photoshop, it was a no-brainer because my kids already create the stories for me. So it's easy to just write their experiences. And then I was able to take those images and create those images in Photoshop. So it just made it easy for me.
So did you grow up an avid reader yourself? How much did the, reading of books and exploration play a role in how you became who you are right now?
Well, the answer to that is absolutely. So when I saw my mom, is an avid book reader, and she, her favorite author is Danielle Steel First and then Stephen King. So I grew up watching her read thick books. So this started when I was in middle school. I didn't read those books, but I wanted to read chapter books. So I started reading romance novels. Books I shouldn't have read, but I started reading romance novels at a young age, and I just enjoyed reading. And even if I'm in my office, there's books everywhere. So I give credit to my mom because she's even now she loves to read.
You know, I don't want to gloss over something that you mentioned, and I think it's important to kind of set the groundwork early on in the podcast about diversity in books. And your son is bored, essentially, because he's not identifying with any of these characters. And that's played a role in something that we talked about right before we started recording this podcast is when my bride and I taught in Manassas Park, Virginia. That was also something that she struggled with as an English teacher with coming up with materials for a giant Latino population that wasn't really interested in a lot of the reading material that was in the school. And she worked hard to make sure that she did find titles and things for that segment of the population to become interested about. So when you see those sorts of things and you're taking matters into your own hands, when you look at the bigger picture, what else can people do or what other things can people do to bring that kind of diversity into reading to make sure that all kids are being reached and all those interests are being piqued?
I'm bringing awareness that for me, I started my niche is specifically young Black boys, but now I'm branching into bringing all diverse literature. I'm working on opening a store and it's going to be all diverse literature. It's about bringing awareness. Parents have them to see exactly why their kids are not excited about reading, maybe testing it out. For me, I'm a mom who basically sit my kids in front of YouTube, and I notice that my kids will watch videos with people who look like them or diverse stories, not necessarily kids who look like them, but diverse stories. You have to see exactly what works for your kids to get them excited. And then we have to come up with a solution. For me, it's like people like to be entertained by things that they can relate to. And just giving schools and giving businesses an opportunity to purchase diverse books, I think is the first step. I think there's not a lot of options out there, especially with books being banned in school. But just giving kids access to those books, to me, is the solution to the problem.
So when you first put these books together, and obviously the website that we also want to talk about, what was the initial reception like when you presented this to folks to say, hey, you know, these are fundamental lessons, these are fundamental things that kids have to do. I'm doing it in this manner. What did people say?
A lot of people are saying that's a good idea. We need that. We need this. But that's good. But the question is, how do we get it to the children? And if they, everybody's not going to come to my website, how do we get the educators involved so that they can say, we need these books? So, but a lot of people are saying, we need this. Kids need access to these books, to diversity.
So with when we're talking about Three Cool Kings, what can people find on your website outside of the books that you read, which I'm going to backtrack and I want to delve into, you know, the book specifically. What else is available at the website?
So now it's just the books that I've written, but I'm in the process of merging to purchasing wholesale books from other diverse authors. So now it's just my books, and I offer coloring books and also flashcard decks, a story about financial literacy. So I created flashcards to go with it. With the books, like one of the books I've written, I want to be a superhero when I grow up. So when you purchase the book, you can get a cape. Just to get the kids excited about reading, they can put the cape on. I have a book about just in a cloud of funk. And with this book, you can get a stick of deodorant. So I'm trying to get the parents excited as well as the kids too by offering bonuses and things like that.
Well, I think that's it's a fun way to do it as well, where it's not just, okay, we're going to be reading these books, and I'm sure some kids are going to read, but when you do kind of jazz it up a little bit, that does build excitement. And what a fantastic idea. And when I talk about, you know, the reception, when you first started to do this, did you test out the books on your sons first? Was that like your first litmus test or your first feedback?
Yes, it's just to get out on them first. And as I mentioned, and I have a couple here, some of the books, this is for actual children. So they were a little embarrassed, and it kind of felt like, okay, I'm somewhat of a celebrity at the same time, but they were excited about reading and seeing themselves in the story and started to write, with characters that weren't them, just to see if they would receive it the same with it not being them. And they're just excited about reading the stories because a lot of the stories highlight the Black culture. And they're just, accustomed to reading it. So we're seeing rather.
And I'm very intrigued by when you mentioned the financial literacy, other things that you're bringing into the fold that might not necessarily be taught in an English or a reading program in a school, but something that is extremely vital to everybody is, you know, from an early age when they start learning that their savings and their allowance to when they're going to be, you know, leaving the nest and out on their own. I love that you brought that into the fold.
Yes, and that was the name of the book is Do I Have to Spend My Own Money? Because, like I said, these are just conversations that I've had with my children. They said, we'll go to the store and they'll have birthday money in their wallet and they want something and they want me to purchase it. Do I have to spend my own money? Yes. Let me tell you why and show you why it's important to spend your own money so that you can understand why I have to say no sometimes. Because I worked hard for my money. And so it's just practical, simple conversations that I've had with my kids that I know other parents are dealing with the same thing.
So you don't have money trees in Georgia the same way we don't have money
No.
trees in New York. Okay, great.
Yeah, see those trees down because we don't have any here.
So when we go back to the website, what are you looking to do, if anything, in 2025 to expand what you are already offering, which sounds very robust when you mentioned that all these other little things are coming with the books. Where else can you go?
So we sell books on Amazon as well. And like I said, I'm trying to do a storefront, but with the website specifically, we're bringing more diverse literature. So I'm focusing on special needs. I'm focusing on the Hispanic community, Asian stories. It's just diverse books is not just, a race. It's, you have kids who have Down syndrome. Their stories need to be told. So I'm trying to switch over the website. I'm hoping maybe by summer 2025 to have those books migrated over, but that's the plan. And also, in my county, we won a grant from my county that's going to allow me to launch a mobile bookstore. So that's going to be launched 2025. And with the hopes of that, I'm hoping to go to individual schools, summer camps, and be able to have the kids come on the bus and select the books. And then I'll be able to see for myself what they choose and what they're interested in.
And that's a great model too. When you know that something's flying off the shelves, then you've obviously, hit a nerve or however we want to refer to that. At least that excitement and that desire to come back. And that's terrific. Now, you came to me via a coworker here at bookvending.com and Global Vending Group. How did you hear about Inchy the Bookworm? And were you familiar with this at all? Had you seen it?
So, literacy is my life. So I was Google searching just different initiatives that people are taking as far as getting kids excited. And I found a YouTube video about book vending machines. I can't remember which state it was, but I said, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea. So I Google searched vending machines, and your site was the first one that came up. And I love when the first one, when it sits on the top, I'm like, that's the one. And so I had a conversation with Miss Terry, and it was amazing. It was like conversation, her vision lined up with my vision, what you guys are doing is amazing. So that's my mission. I've already told her. I said, we're going to get book vending machines in local schools in my community. I told her I would talk to the mayor, and I had talked to the mayor in my city. He was excited about it. I talked to, I think, three more people, a councilman. He's excited. She connected me with someone from the Atlanta Hawks. So they're excited. So I think everybody knows that there's a need for us trying to help to increase the literacy rates, but nobody really has the answer. So when you have something that sounds like a good plan, I think a lot of people are going to back it.
Well, we're very excited that you're doing all that great work, and again, with the mission of literacy being the underlying thing that we're all working towards, and now here we are, you and I are having this conversation and sharing your story. When we're going back to the books, when you're putting these together, what are the challenges that you face as an author to have a great message but know that you need to tailor it to kids? What are the things that you go through to make sure that you are, number one, getting a good message out, but number two, making it entertaining for kids?
Well, so I write the books for ages between starting with kindergarten up until, let's say, fifth grade. So I try to do different, each book is for a different grade level. And it's just trying to figure out what's going to excite the kids, but what's not at the same time. Is it too complicated for them to read? How thick should the paragraph be? Is it entertaining too soon? Am I going to lose them by the end of the book? So just knowing exactly, because I'm not an educator, so I'm not sitting with, I just have my kids in my house. So just trying to figure out how to write the story that's going to keep the kids excited and engaged. And if I can get a kid to want to read my book, once or twice a night for bedtime, that's good. But if I get a kid who gets my book and just tosses it, I don't feel like I really did my job.
So, what advice would you give to other parents who may be going through the same struggles where it's, and it could be any, myriad of issues where maybe it's too complicated, or the subject matter isn't interesting. What would you give to other parents as advice to how to get started reading early?
Just allow, you have to carve out the time. I know our lives get busy. I'm a single mom to three children. You have to, even if you have to put it on your calendar, make it fun. Like I said, some of my books come with props, but you can find props around your house to make it exciting. You have to make it where the kids look forward to it. You really have to do it. You have to find a way to get them excited. Let them read on their own, and then if they have siblings, let them read in front of the siblings. We call it playing teacher. All kids want to play teacher. And so, but you really have to carve out the time to be able to do it. And then after a while, it becomes routine, and then the kids come to expect, okay, it's bedtime, but it's story time first.
One of the things that we talk a lot about and does come up in the circles that we run in here is, you know, libraries and book vending machines, and, you know, how do they work together? And, you know, obviously they do. We're in a number, you know, we're in over 10,000 locations. And the reason that I'm asking or bringing this question up is the powership of ownership, where a child has this book and it becomes theirs. How does that play into when you're getting people interested in, you know, the diversity of books and obviously promoting your own books, kind of encouraging that whole idea of ownership, that this book is mine, this cape is mine, and I can put this cape on every time I want to read this book that's mine.
So let me say that because the mother was asking the same question. What's the difference between we have libraries? I told him, I said, well, I'm a mom. Let me tell you something. There's something about a kid being able to put their own money into, speaking about the book vending machines is why he said that. There's something about the kids being able to see machines lights, being the coin in the machine and just the whole experience. He said, you know, we've had libraries for years. You know, the kids need something different, something exciting. Like you said, to be able to look at the selection and say, I want this one. This is mine. I get to have it. You know, it's the experience. We have to do something different to get the kids excited because, you know, times have changed. And even for me, just going into the library and then having to look, you know, research the computer catalog and do my research, but it's just not as fun as being able to go and select something. And then saying that it's yours, and you were independent enough to be able to have the experience to put the coin into the machine and watch it drop. So, I mean, I'm excited about that experience just for myself, just to see the kids doing it.
That's one of the things that we love is when we have the ribbon cutting ceremonies and we work with these schools to see the excitement on not only the kids' faces, but the you know, the school administration and the other teachers and the Board of Education, where everybody is really rallying about around this. And, you know, you mentioned the folks that you're talking to about getting these, you know, machines into the areas that you would like to. It's the same kind of thing. Where are you in that entire planning process of moving forward with extending literacy through book vending?
To my local elected officials because and I was asked, why don't you go to the superintendent of your county, of the school district? Because I said, I want to know which schools are failing, what the I want to zero into those specific schools in my community. And so it's just talking to the mayor's office to see what their reading program looks like. We have a lot of programs in our city and in surrounding cities where some of the mayors are doing like a reading with the mayor program. Trying to see what their literacy programs look like first, because I'm not going to just go knock at the elementary door and say, hey, let me in. I want to try to build a relationship with my local appointed officials first, and then being introduced to the schools through them, and then having the conversations with, you know, the principal and ELA representatives and let them know, hey, we're here to give you a new, innovative way to get the kids excited about reading. So I'm trying to go in slowly, not, you know, jumping. Honestly, I tried the flyer thing. I tried to send out flyers specifically because as an author, I wanted to do read alouds in schools, but I know that they have a lot going on. So I didn't really get a lot of responses. So I'm just trying a different strategy.
And I really like the idea, again, of that bringing everyone in because it is a community. We've heard it in so many different phrases about we have to bring everybody together. It takes a village. I mean, this sort of thing really does. And I think a lot of times, you know, people aren't familiar with really where we stand as a literate country. We're not really performing up to what we could be. And to hear what you're doing down here and what you're doing with your books is very refreshing because you've got some skin in the game here and you really want to make a difference, but also conveying that message that everyone else does have to have that same skin in the game as well.
Absolutely, because you need, I mean, you can't be successful in solving math problems without reading. You can't be successful, you know, doing in science. You have reading is the foundation. If literacy rates are low, I mean, you cannot succeed in life without being able to read. And, you know, we can increase literacy rates and get kids excited and entertained at the same time. They just need access. So that's my main thing. That's need access to things that they want to read.
What have your kids told you about these books that you have? I would imagine that as proud as they probably are, do they, hey, my mom wrote this, and they can bring it to school and share it, and then you become sort of a celebrity, with a young fan base saying, yes, oh my gosh, that's so and so's mom. She wrote these really great books.
I always know this. My eldest is 13. He's a teenager now. So I have the story I have to share about that is that he's in middle school and his face is on the cover of Do I Have to Spend My Own Money? And it looks like him. And someone in his class says, hey, my little cousin has your book. Yeah, someone
Oh.
I do a lot of, I've done a lot of in-person events and I've sold my books in person in the area. So it's no surprise. But he was so embarrassed. He was like, oh my gosh. And so because your kids, they're teenagers, the kids actually went to my website and they were sending messages saying, hey, you're Adele's mom. So they're actually chatting through my chat system in my website, which is funny. So I didn't think it could possibly impact them. But he said it was, they just made jokes about it and it didn't really bother them. But, could have been negative. They could have made fun of them because kids can be cruel. But overall, they're excited about, being somewhat of a small grade celebrity.
When I was a kid, and I would think of an author of a book, and you mentioned Stephen King, I imagine a guy sitting in a room at a typewriter just working his keys. And obviously things are very, very different now with technology, and a little bit maybe easier to put a manuscript together. What other things do you do to make sure that people know what you're doing? You mentioned doing, some read alouds and that kind of thing. What other activities do you do, whether it's social media or anything else that comes to mind, to promote what the bigger mission is of Three Cool Kings?
So, because and I try to let authors know that being an author is a business. So I do a lot of networking. I do a lot of networking, and I always ask questions. Every time I ask a question, I introduce my name is Alicia Kelly. I'm the owner of Three Cool Kings. This is what I do, very quick and brief. And sometimes people will come and say, I always wanted to write a book. What's this process? I've exchanged emails with people, and people just pick my brain. But it's always use any opportunity that I have to talk to people to let them know who I am and what I'm doing. But in-person events, networking, and that's the best thing. And I do a lot of like seminars and webinars and stuff like that.
So that's a lot to juggle. How do you keep everything straight to know that, okay, this is time to work on the next book. This is the time that I have to go out and shake hands. And this is the time that I have to invest in social media, because I would imagine that social media does play a role. As funny as that sounds, we talk about screen time, but it is such a wonderful tool to bring everyone back to the written word. How do you keep it all together?
Two planners. I have a family, one for the kids and one for the business, and I use my calendar online. So, and I have my watch. It has a lot of reminders. It lets me know, hey, you got to do this. So I'm just trying to keep things organized and holding myself accountable to say, okay, you didn't sleep yet. You need to get up. And rewarding myself for the small wins. Like I said, I'm a single mom, so I reward myself if my boys get the trash out in time before the trash man got here. Just that keeps me going. It makes me feel like I'm not overwhelming myself when I celebrate little wins. This just works for me. I just celebrate little wins. Well, I showed up to this meeting, or I actually had a radio interview last Friday where I had to get up and drive to the radio interview to talk about my business. I actually made it on time. So it makes it more fun when you celebrate the small wins in between.
And speaking of the whole idea of screen time, what is the toughest battle that you've seen with such instant access to entertainment, whether it's on a phone or a tablet, on the big screen in the living room? How do you approach that, knowing that, the reading aspect is so important in our lives, but hey, it's real easy to kind of look over to your right or to your left or straight ahead and have these images and sounds blasting right at you. That's got to be a daunting task, but a rewarding one when you find that sweet spot that you can get past that. What are your feelings about the whole idea of not the battle between, but the balance between screen time and sitting down and reading?
So for me, my house, my kids, they love playing video games. So I love Xfinity because I can go on my app and turn off the internet. And so I do that for all of us because I don't want to be sitting on the computer And then, telling them they can't have, I could just turn off their devices individually, but I do it as a whole so that they can see me as well. We need to do something else. Because it's easy to get trapped in. The TV's playing in the background, the video game is on, they're scrolling, watching reels all day, but limiting the Wi-Fi time so that they can focus on something else. And then, like I said, incorporating, like, it's time to read before bed. So that's a routine specifically for my 8-year-old now. Because you have to regulate your time. I'm just thankful that I could turn the Wi-Fi off easily. And then after a while, it's not, it's for my 11-year-old and 13-year-old, they haven't, gotten used to the routine. They still want to be able to have downloaded to the Wi-Fi to them, but it's at least I'm trying to implement something. You got to try something.
Do you ever get any kind of comment or feedback from your kids? Obviously, teenagers, a little bit different with the communication style, but any of their, the way that they might say, hey, someone saw me reading and maybe got a little inspired to maybe increase their reading time if they were struggling. Do they have any influence that you can see on their peer groups?
Sure. I'm not sure if they have any influence. I will say that my 11-year-old, he's bringing chapter books home now. So I said, well, did your teacher make you select this? He said, no, I went and I chose it myself. This is the one that I was speaking of that was struggling with his reading in elementary. So you should ask him who influenced you to pick this book, but I was excited to see that he picked his own chapter book and it's actually in his desk in his room. It's not just tossed somewhere. So they may get an influence from someone else. I don't know, school, another person in the grade level.
Which is excellent to think about when it's not just always coming from an adult. It's other kids saying, hey, no, this is really cool. There's a whole world out there. Or, even, making that partnership with Screen Time to say, hey, this movie is based on a book. Let's go check out the book because it's probably different. And at least in my 50 years on this planet, the book is usually better than the movie anyway.
Absolutely. A lot of
So,
the books that my kids are reading have comics in it. The characters, I think that has a lot to do with it. But there's a lot of pages, so I'm assuming they're reading.
What else is coming up? I know we're at the beginning of 2025, and we talked a little bit about the website maybe being revamped coming up in the summer. What else is on your plate to promote what you're doing and to get others on board with the vision that you have?
Well, definitely, the mobile bookstore is coming in summer 2025. So I'm trying to get other kids excited about it so that they can possibly come on the bus and do read aloud to the kids. And I'm trying to use this as an example to show the city, like, hey, kids are excited about this. I'm just starting my city. We're moving over to Atlanta next. So I'm just trying to get everyone excited about, hey, if you try something new, the kids will read. So this is going to be my focus, is to focus on the mobile bookstore. And I'm still, at the same time, I'm speaking to everyone about the vending machines, the book vending machines. So it's going to be two different tracks working at the same time.
And have they also been receptive to the whole idea of this diversity? We talked to a woman from Regina, Saskatchewan, where they were working with a tribal school and of natives in Canada, where the entire book machine that they have is nothing but it's there. All the books are written by tribal authors as well as in their own language. What's the reception been when we talk about this diversity? Are people just like, yeah, this is also what we really need?
Myself that I have to explain to them exactly what I mean by diversity, because a lot of people assume that when you say diversity, it's you're just talking about black books or Hispanic books, but just letting people know that diversity is so much more than that. Like I mentioned before, maybe it's a kid who doesn't like to wear glasses. I had an issue with when I was in the third grade, I had to wear glasses. Mines were thick, and just feeling like I was the only kid. Just having those stories highlight specific needs for different kids, that's diversity as well. So trying to explain to people that, okay, it's not, I'm an author who specifically writes books for black boys, but that's not all diversity is about. It's not about the culture. It's about other aspects of kids. So just explaining and educating them is the main thing.
And speaking of learning, we're all learning every day. I think that, anybody who walks through life that says, I didn't learn something today, I don't know what planet they're living on, because that is certainly not the way that, the roads that I go down. So I think it's wonderful that you're also helping to kind of open the eyes to, there's a lot of different things that are happening there. And that it's just unbelievably commendable. Alicia, thank you so much for being on the Reading Revolution. Let's stay in touch. Would love to hear, the progress of what you're working on and other ways that, we can help celebrate all the great work that you're doing down in the great state of Georgia.
So much for having me. I enjoyed this. Thank you. I look forward to coming again soon.
For more information about the Reading Revolution, please visit bookvending.com. If you would like to contact us or would like to suggest a guest, drop us a line at readingrevolutionpod@gmail.com. The Reading Revolution is hosted by Josh Gregory, with technical direction from Thomas Crane and David Gagan. The podcast is produced by Jake Blumberg and Connor Russo. The executive producer is Jay Blumberg. Thanks again for watching and listening. We'll see you here again on The Reading Revolution, where literacy matters.